to the Development Policy Centre podcast. In this episode, Paul Flanagan discusses the latest developments in the PNG economy in the seminar that was held in October 2015.
My name is Stephen House. I'm the Director of the Development Policy Centre. We're the host for this seminar. And as usual, let's begin by acknowledging the first Australians on whose land we meet, and let's pay our respect to the elders of the Ngunnawal people, past and present. We're very happy today to be able to introduce Paul Flanagan to you. This is actually based on a paper he first wrote for the PNG Update and presented at the PNG Update in Port Moresby at the University of Papua New Guinea. That was back in June.
That's right, that in June.
And then we had various plans that he presented, but it's taken a while. Of course, things don't stand still, so this is a substantially revised version of the paper that Paul presented back in June. I'm sure many of you know Paul. He's had a long, distinguished career with AusAid and with Treasury in Australia, but also with PNG Treasury. So he served as a senior advisor through the ECP or SGP program. And we're very fortunate that since leaving the Australian Treasury, Paul's associated himself with us and done a lot of really good analysis, I'm sure some of which you've read on the blog and through our publications. I think this is your first seminar in ANU in this capacity.
Yeah. Yep.
So thanks a lot, Paul. And yeah, we've got an hour and try and leave time for Q&A. And I'll just say, just in case I don't get time to mention it at the end, we're going to have another seminar in 2 weeks, also on a Monday, with Tony Swan, talking about some analysis he's been doing on school exam results and linking that to the introduction of the tuition fee-free policy. So that's, it's Monday fortnight, lunchtime. I'm not sure if it's the same room, is it?
No, that actually will be
in the Brindamella Lecture Theatre. Yeah. All right. So without further ado, over to you, Paul.
Thanks a lot, Stephen, and thanks very much for coming along. My apologies for the tie, for those who don't recognise it. Mm-hmm. It's the 40th year anniversary tie that of PNG independence. So I thought it'd be just the appropriate occasion to wear such a one. Like Stephen, I'd also wish to acknowledge the original owners of the land and pay my respects to their elders, past and present. Stephen's mentioned some of the background of this presentation. It certainly is a very, very different one than the one I gave back in June, then also subsequently to the Australia PNG Business Council in August. There have been lots of changes. And I guess just as part of the context of this presentation, very conscious of some of the sensitivities in PNG currently. Some of the challenges facing there as a young democracy, and wishing them the best as they deal with some of the delights of parliamentary democracy, freedom of expression, peaceful change, protest, discussion, the things we look for in democracy. But it does mean that I'm very conscious that some things that could be said are in a potentially difficult context. So I'm going to try and be quite sensitive in some of the things that I do mention. So just part of the context. But I'll also be going through, when I was doing the original version of this, I was talking to some of my PNG colleagues, and they talked about, Paul, when I look at this presentation, I think of hard talk. I think of something they called malnourished talk. And so the presentation I gave was something that I framed in the context of, this is some hard talk, important talk for PNG. But since then, there's been a 2016 budget strategy, and I want to sort of, as we go through this presentation, I want to talk about, first of all, what could be meant by the term crises, because there are different interpretations of that. Secondly, to look closely at the 2016 budget strategy, which was released just last week. Boy, that made my presentation so much harder because I had to update everything and try and backwork the numbers and things. But anyway, so as I go through that, I want to have a look, and I think it's a very hard talk document, and I want to go through and do some analysis of that, both on the revenue side, expenditure, some of the financing, some of the debt implications, then map out a potential alternative to that, a softer option, but still a hard talk option, just to indicate there are different pathways away from a potential crisis. But I want to sort of move more to just, I guess, an acknowledgement of some of the realities in PNG, what I'll call sort of real talk. Then move to the external challenge, and then just touch on some criteria for the 2016 budget, because this is going to be the shortest presentation in terms of a useful life, because tomorrow it's going to be out of date when the supplementary budget comes out, and it's going to be even more out of date on Tuesday week when the 2016 budget comes out. But, hey, that's life when you're sort of booking the time for a seminar. First of all, when there was references last year to slippery slope and a reference to crisis, there were these questions, well, what do you mean by that term? What do you mean by a sort of crisis? And as I've gone through and reflected on that through the period of time, I think there are sort of three broad types of crisis one can sort of refer to when looking at sort of this history of countries, both developed and developing. One is sort of a fiscal type of crisis that focuses primarily on the budgetary situation. And so that was something similar to what PNG faced back in the mid and the late 90s, where there's a real shortage of government cash, and that started really reflecting in the delivery of services, just a real concern, will the government's checks bounce or not? So that's one type of crisis, a sort of a fiscal crisis. And there's a few sort of characteristics you might see in that sort of crisis. A second one potentially is an external crisis, is a balance of payments crisis, where essentially you run out of foreign currency. You run out of Australian dollars or US dollars to pay bills. And that can either be in the private sector or usually when the crisis hits, it's seen more as when the government sector can no longer pay some of the import bills and things it may have for direct imports. So this is a balance of payments type of crisis, an external crisis. And once again, you can see in the mid-1990s as well as the late 90s, that sort of situation on occasions where PNG's balance of payments, the import cover, almost fell to zero, almost ran out of foreign exchange entirely. So that's a different type of crisis, although in particular in countries such as PNG, where there's a very high propensity for government expenditure to translate into imports, either directly or, for example, through the consumption expenditure of public servants, then often these have gone hand in hand, which is why in PNG the ones in the crisis we look at tend to have characteristics of both. There's another third type of crisis you can observe in other countries, which is, I guess, more what I'll call a policy muddling down. It's a series of continuing poor decisions that ultimately start undermining effective and sustainable growth. And that then starts manifesting itself through generally a much, much longer period of time into quite, you know, acute crises that have got a lot more characteristics than just economic. But I'm not going to touch on that. I'm just sort of noting that that is a different type of crisis, but certainly not one that I'll be covering in the discussion today. And that's what I call the muddling down. So let's turn to the fiscal challenge and some of the discussions about why potentially some would see PNG's current fiscal situation over 13-14 has been a sign of a potential crisis. Go on in, Aaron. And I guess just a characteristic of that is, and it doesn't have to translate into a crisis, but it's just that when you end up with deficit figures down here of over, you know, sort of the 7.6 and 6.9, I think these are the largest in PNG's history. And when we've had really large deficits, such as this in the past, we can see that is very much the characteristic of the mid-90s crisis and also some of the pressures that were faced in the late 90s. It's just a warning sign that these things may be around. And so we'll focus in part on this fiscal challenge and are there paths to move this sort of number back up to something that is seen as being, I guess, more sustainable. To do that, though, I think it's when we think about the adjustment to move this higher up, we're going to have to deal with both revenue and expenditure items, and I think it should sort of put PNG in the context of its neighbours. Because if we're starting to think, well, are we going to suggest cuts in expenditure or increases in revenues, then it's just useful to sort of put in the context, I think, of its neighbouring countries. And so how does PNG compare with other countries in the region? So I've got Philippines, China, Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, and then Papua New Guinea. Papua New Guinea will be in red on each occasion. So they're individual countries, and also doing comparison with low-income countries or emerging market Asian sort of countries. For 2014, mm-hmm. we see that the level of deficit that PNG had in 2014 was extraordinarily high relative to its peers, as well as groups of other developing countries. Its tax levels also is quite interesting in that its taxation as a share of GDP also shows up as the highest amongst the sort of countries in the Asian sort of region, as well as much, much higher than low-income countries and even the average for emerging market Asia. In fact, it sort of whirled towards some of the characteristics of taxation levels that you'd see more characteristic of developed countries. So the taxation levels seem high, which would suggest that if we are looking for a change, we'd have to be cautious about suggestions of lifting the levels of taxation higher than certainly that number, and maybe you'd think more, can we even move it back into a number that might be more sort of in between a low-income and emerging market Asia as being the sort of point? It's only one metric. You've got to be careful with it. It's only a share of GDP. People know there's questions about these measures. But for the point of comparison, it's just a useful sort of check as to when we sort of help guide the sort of choices as to these pathways of national crisis. So high taxing, but even higher spending. So once again, PNG's the share of government expenditure to GDP 2014 was very, very high relative to other Asian countries as well as to low-income and emerging market Asian countries. Which suggests that potentially a lot of the work will have to be done on the expenditure side in making the adjustment to the deficit. That said, there's a bit of room to move because PNG's debt-to-GDP levels of the public are actually quite good relative to certainly its sort of peer Asian countries. And, you know, even better, you know, sort of not bad in comparison to sort of groups of developing countries. So there's not there's nothing that jumps out as being a crisis, certainly when you look at public debt. And so some people have talked about things such as, you know, a crisis in other countries related to debt. Certainly that's not the current situation in PNG. With a couple of caveats. Number one, it can move very quickly. If you are running large deficits, that number can increase very quickly. Number two, it deals with official public debt, so it doesn't deal with off-budget debt. We know that there's a whole range of other liabilities the government sort of faces, but so do these other sort of Asian countries. The other one is sometimes when you do have a debt crisis, it's not so much about the level, but issues around refinancing. And we know that there are off-budget issues in PNG, the most prominent one of which is the collared loan and UBS for the oil search loan, which has to be rolled over between March and June of next year. And that's a large amount of money. And so there's this rollover risk that also comes in the public debt that isn't picked up on these sort of numbers. So anyway, let me just, I'm going to build up sort of a graph that'll look at sort of expenditure, revenue, and then talk about the adjustments that we've talked about, some large adjustments. So this is just looking at the expenditure as a share of GDP for PNG from 1990. This number here stops at 2014. And in future slides, I'll extend that further out to see what this adjustment pathway is on expenditure through to 2020. On top of this, I'll now put the revenue to GDP line. So the orange is expenditure, the revenue is the blue line. And so what we have here, I guess, is starting to make one of the things in expenditure is a very large jump in expenditure in recent years, pulled back a little bit more recently, matched at the same time as a very significant drop in revenue as a share of GDP. And, of course, the gap between those two, when the blue line's below the orange line, it's a big deficit. Those big deficits referred to previously in the 1990s. But the size of this deficit here and this sort of pattern here is historically very, very large. And even in the very hard talk scenario we'll talk to, that gap if we're talking about things that continue above 1%, that gap will be about, cumulatively, about 30 percentage points of GDP across the years. And that's the largest gap between those lines there has been in PNG's history, even with the very rapid adjustment that's talked about in the 2016 budget strategy. So, all right, so that's some of the sort of the context. And I'll use this a bit as an analytical tool to explore some of the alternative sort of pathways. So the 2016 budget strategy out last week, and I'm going to call this very hard talk. We'll see this in the graph when it sort of comes through. So in some ways, the return to surplus is pushed out by 3 years, and I think that's very sensible, in part because the strategy of trying to get back to surplus by 2017 was just unrealistic. It had cuts in the budget, in the 2015 budget, of over 25% in expenditure, over 30% in health, 48% real cut in infrastructure over those 2 years. It just wasn't sort of credible to get back into surplus at that time. And so pushing it out is, I think, a sensible adjustment strategy. You don't want to put the brakes on too hard because that can really hurt the economy and that can really hurt the poor. The strategy is going to move the debt-to-GDP ratio back to 30% by that sort of time in 2020. But there are major cuts in expenditure. So we'll look at those sort of implications in the next slide. But overall, this is a very timely... Well, it's good that it came out because of those issues I mentioned in the 2015 budget. There are issues of credibility of that document. Since the budget came out, there hasn't been a medium-term update to acknowledge the fall in LNG prices that have occurred, that obviously have been very significant since and came very much more on the radar from, I guess, December onwards. The Bank of PNG now forecasts those drop in LNG prices between 14 and 15, essentially it's at half the level. It's gone from, so the metric is about $16 per MMMTPUs. I forget exactly what that, down to about 8. So a very large drop in prices. And then my EFOs that I guess picked up that LNG prices with the international commodity price drop, 1.6 billion, but there are other commodity prices going backwards also. As well as, and this is a bit of a surprise, another drop in other revenues that was a bit unexpected of another keynote billion. So altogether, 2.6 billion in revenue disappeared over that course of just over 7 months, 20% of revenues. When we talked about a budget crisis in Australia, between the budget and the MIEFO, we lost 1.5% of revenue base. This is 20% of the base win in that sort of period of time. So a major, major challenge. And also we had, obviously, both Moody's and Standard & Poor's have moved PNG, in part because there hadn't been some sort of strategy to deal with this adjustment, moved it to a negative outlook on both occasions. So let's start looking at this fiscal consolidation that sort of was talked about. Let me just, I guess, make these points from looking at this graph. So now this is the graph I showed before. Orange line is expenditure. This budget strategy is a share of GDP. This is the dotted yellow line. This is the patterns of cuts in expenditure to GDP shown in the 2016 budget strategy. And the dotted blue line is revenue to GDP. They are pretty extraordinary drops. You know, like PNG has never, ever been down in this sort of space. When I was talking about maybe aiming... And this would be generally over a much longer time frame to sort of adjust the share or the size of government, the economy, to make it more akin to some other Asian countries. We were sitting at levels that were sitting higher than these sort of levels. So it's a historic shift downwards to levels that are certainly unprecedented in PNG's history. They're still higher levels than, let's say, I think Indonesia or the Philippines, but they're lower than other countries such as Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, China. So, you know, it's a question as to, on this metric, what the balance is. But it is certainly, in PNG's case, quite precipitous as a move. And that's both on the expenditure side and on the revenue side. When I was asking that question before, you know, how much of the work do we do? I guess when we're heading here at this sort of line, the expectation was, well, can we hold this line up? It was almost, are there things we can do to actually lift revenues given this precipitous top? So it's a different question than almost the one I was talking about in 2014 about pulling revenues down. Now the budget strategy is out. I look at these numbers and I think, on I'm worried about how far that revenue has moved down, and I'll touch on that in sort of some alternative options. So focusing on the revenue drop, a few sort of components there. One interesting thing I found about the revenue drop is this sort of is a structural issue on taxation in PNG. So we've got the tax review, and it'll be really interesting to see when it comes out, see what sort of is picked up in the budget when it does come out. But I certainly hope it touches on the issue of resource taxation, because if you look at that incredible decline, it's really interesting when you break that taxation, that taxation effort between the resource sector and the non-resource sector. And this is what this next slide does. Essentially, it compares through time the orange graphs are the average tax rate in the resource sector. So it's all resource taxes over all resource revenue. So giving you an average tax rate over periods of time. So generally, you know, sort of 7-8 years. And we see back in the 1990s that at that stage, the resource sector taxation was, you know, it was below that of the economy as a whole. Sorry, the orange line is the non-resource sector. Blue is the resource sector. It was lower than the economy as a whole, but it was still, you know, hanging up around 20%. During the boom times and the high commodity prices, and I guess that's not too surprising, but there were a couple of factors there. It was the high commodity prices, but other elements arguably also. Octeti became very profitable and very large sort of dividend payments in this sort of period of time. We ended up with the resource sector average tax rate moving up above 30%, and that was above the rest of the economy. And as an economist, my starting point would be to say because of resource rents in the resource sector, one would expect a higher average tax rate. It's just more efficient to actually tax that resource sector if you can because of those resource rents without harming the economy more broadly. The dramatic change we see going out in the 4 years is the drop in the blue column. So the actual average tax rates in the resource sector drops dramatically in the sort of period going ahead. This breaks it up. So these here are the sort of the average lines you saw before, the movements up and down through time. But here we see, especially with the impact, part of this is driven by LNG sort of prices. But even before the impact of LNG prices, this is the yellow line, we see it's well and truly below the line that existed during the sort of the mid-90s. So to me, that just suggests there's a structural problem in resource taxation. You can't fix it overnight. These projects have a long lead time, but it's something to be well and truly looking at if you're trying to improve the resource position PNG, thinking 5 or 10 years' time. This is the incredible variation relative to the non-resource sector. It's pretty flat, and you'd sort of expect that. And because it's fairly flat, that's quite an interesting observation. That's an observation, you know, you see that in a lot of countries. You expect this ratio of revenue to GDP, especially in this case, non-resource revenue to non-resource GDP, to stay relatively constant, because it's pretty hard to change that dramatically. And so this has been sitting around the 26% level, but the graph I showed you had it falling down to 20. And to me, that just raises questions about the revenue effort that's being made across the economy. I'm surprised to see that overall level of revenue drop so low when you'd expect it, at best, it'd be a slow movement in these sort of resource numbers. And it's interesting, it's picked up in the last point in the previous slide, but I think it's one of the questions that both the Business Council of PNG and the Manufacturing Council, they put out a response to the 2016 budget strategy today. And two of the three key comments they made was about revenue. They don't understand the revenue assumptions and some of the forecasting arrangements, and they want more transparency about those arrangements. And when I have a look at the strategy and I see that drop in revenues compared with this sort of, I share the questions. More transparency in that area would certainly be very useful. All right then, so moving from the resource side, let's touch on some of those expenditure cuts. And once again, you saw that there was that dramatic cut that was sort of coming through in those expenditures. So this is where, like this is part of the presentation that's going to become redundant tomorrow because we're going to see some of the details and the cuts. So I'm just trying to gaze in a crystal ball and thinking, wow, these are major cuts that are being talked about. You know, there's sort of foreshadow cuts of $1.4 billion in the 2015 year, and another $1.4 billion next year. Now, how on earth do they do that especially when they've got a series of areas that are protected, either formally by policy or in effect areas are protected because of legal obligations, whether it be interest rate payments or loans or various other sort of types of government commitments they have, obligations to landowners underneath various agreements and things. So I want to go into this sort of graph here. On the left-hand side is the 2015 MIUFO, and I've just broken some of the patterns of expenditure into some big components. So the top is just a bit over the $16 billion of expenditure that was foreshadowed in the 2015 MIUFO still as expenditure. This number here then indicates the 2018 sort of scenario. So in 2018, we see that in aggregate, in 3 years' time, the total level of expenditure will be just over $14 billion relative to just over $16 billion. So there's cuts of nearly $2 billion kina in nominal terms between what was thought to be the case in the middle of the year and in several years' time. And this is in nominal terms. So this isn't making allowance for inflation at the aggregate. So this is very large real cuts. So to try and get a sense of the adjustment here, this just tries to break it between those items that you can move and you'll be looking for savings there primarily, and those that are pretty fixed. So the fixed things are things such as donor grants. You know, they're on both sides. There's no point cutting donor grants, but you lose the revenue as well as the expenditure. So there's a number of things there, ITCs, both sides, concessional loans. There's some things you don't want to sort of cut. The interest costs are sort of legislated, but because public debt's going up, your interest costs will be going up also. And so this is an estimate of the interest costs in 2018. Then assume that those things you're going to try and protect in the policy sense. Here I've got a range of sort of fixed commitments as well as other sort of political priorities. Let's assume they grow, but only in line with inflation. So education grows in line with inflation. That means you can pay teachers and compensate their salaries for inflation, but it doesn't mean you can have any more teachers. You know, it's still tough. It's still tough when sort of going through. Even these growths, let's say, in expenditure in those policy-protected areas from 38.50 to 44.57. I've separated out infrastructure because it's not clear whether it's up there for being a potential cut or not. I've got DSIP. I don't think anyone's talking about cutting DSIP, but I think it should be there on the agenda as we sort of look at various options. But it means that if you projected infrastructure and DSIP in those other areas, you're trying to cut that base in normal terms from 4.6 billion down to 1.13. So that's a 75% nominal cut. Oh, that's going to be really, really painful. You know, once again, that's the question of elements of credibility. Because still down here, we've got things such as, well, for example, all of the funding for IRC. You can't cut that by 75% or else you're going to lose a lot of your revenue base, which we've indicated previously has been a problem. So I think these are really, really tough expenditure cuts they're talking about. This is very hard talk in the budget show. All right then, this here is just in the budget strategy. Sort of, these are the interest costs that are estimated to go through time. 2013, they're a bit underneath 500. They've more than doubled. And even underneath the very hard case scenario, assuming that the financing is entirely from borrowings, and you know, there's assumptions behind this on interest rates and that'll be, I can go into in question time if you want. So the left-hand side, interest costs will stop a bit below $2 billion. Up from their sort of level of about $1 billion at the moment. But public debt, which is shown on the right-hand side, drops from 35% down to 30%. So, and I think it was one of the targets that we just picked up in the actual budget strategy itself. But them saying revenue seems to be too low, expenditure seems to be a bit too tough, really, when still looking at this. So the question is there another sort of option? This is still a hard talk option as I sort of go through it, but it's a softer one that was put there out in the budget strategy. And this is only just one example. There'd be other sort of examples. And in some ways, I guess, it's almost a bit late to talk about these alternatives because a budget strategy came out last week. And in some ways, the whole point of the discussion and that, and hopefully it was taken into account from June, is that there were a series of options that were facing the people at PNG. And maybe these can still be considered through sort of other, you know, sort of processes because I think this will be a multi-year adjustment, and so there'll be lots of decision-making points as we go through. So essentially, the key adjustments here is that, okay, let's just try and hold that revenue ratio. I don't know how to do it because I haven't seen the details of exactly what revenue measures are incorporated into the supplementary budget. I don't know what they've already done. They're saying they're going to raise $1.1 billion, so it's really hard to say in detail what it should encompass. But I'm just saying that it should be, in principle, possible to essentially keep revenue growing in line with the rest of the economy once you've taken your commodity price hit. So once you've adjusted to those levels in the 2015 budget, the MIFO, you should be able to hold those levels in the out years. So that's one sort of key change there. On the expenditure side, just back off the cuts by 500 million kina in the 2016 budget and then aim to grow in line once again with the economy. And that is, you know, sort of the 8% nominal, that's 5% inflation, so 5% of it is just to cover off sort of price increases. There's population growth of over 2%. So this implies per capita expenditure growth of only about 1% per annum. And one would think, given the development challenges in PNG, this is the longer-term expenditure growth you'd certainly be looking for. I've included in the scenario asset sales account for about half of the $6.9 billion in additional financing required even underneath the very tough talk option, so $3 billion in asset sales. And then just, I guess, in the when talking about other adjustment parts, just highlighting the importance of growth and sustainable growth options. So at the moment, we've just been talking about the budget, but obviously the size of the economy, that GDP figure is a number that drives a lot of this, and if you can lift that sustainable level of growth, then it's good for the budget, but it's also obviously really important for those sectors of the budget, or for those sectors of the economy that seem to have been missed out. So this then is what happens underneath. This is just an alternative scenario. These numbers are still quite precipitous in their drops through to sort of 2015, but they're sort of then held and sort of more frozen as shares of GDP. Still lower, but still more in a pinpoint, I guess, of a lot of the, some of the other sort of Asian countries. But still really tough, still really tough, but not as tough. So the same numbers before, when sort of looking at them, because the top number is now nearly $2 billion higher through the combination of that $500 million, but mainly from that growth rate, as well as revenues being higher, in this case it's only unit expenditure, so mainly the 8% nominal growth rate in expenditure through 17 and 18. We see that the type of adjustments you're looking at, depending on which area is protected, might be more in the area of 11 to 18%, which I think is much more realistic than the 50 to 75%. And, of course, these are, once again, nominal terms. So you add about 15% on top of this to get into real terms. These are still tough. These are still tough, but I think they're a little bit more realistic. But these are options, once again, for the people at PNG to potentially have a look at and sort of discuss. This here then just shows the sort of the outcomes from this sort of scenario. I guess it just slows a little bit. In fact, the deficit numbers end up being remarkably similar between the sort of two. So there isn't a huge difference between the sort of the interest cost and the debt to GDP ratios, unless you start getting into asset sales. And so this number here and the interest costs go down once you start looking at the possibility of financing some of the deficits through asset sales. I guess this is just then touching on those messages about growth. Just two slides here that people saw the blog last week. In recent years, growth hasn't been too bad, but big divergences between GDP growth rates, which is the blue line, and non-resource GDP growth rates. To expect this is the difference, but be careful on focusing only on the blue because that can give a message of thinking, wow, the economy's doing really, really well. That number is a plus 25% increase. I think the non-resource per capita measure is a better one for actually getting a sense of economic well-being than people at PNG. That's been minus 3%. So there's huge difference in the sort of the policy story depending as to which number you choose. And I think the other one. But going forward, the worry is that this number sits at below 2% in out years. Well, for a lot of Asian countries, if you look at that number, it's several percentage points higher, and that really matters. So what can be done longer term on the sustainable sort of growth side? And the one that I continue to get worried about is the agriculture sector. And so this is the long-term performance of the agriculture sector in PNG. And it sits down there at a very low level per capita. over a very long period of time, and I think is a major ongoing sort of challenge. And getting these growth rates up and pleading there, I think, would be really important for PNG. Just a slide, I guess, touching. I've touched on very hard talk, budget strategy, hard talk, an alternative, but then I guess some real talk that some of these are aggregate numbers. We're moving these lines up and down. Some of the movements look quite extraordinary in terms of these historic and precipitous drops. But what is the observed behaviour? What do we see in sort of practice while the discussion is here are the big changes? Number one, this fiscal consolidation is extraordinarily challenging for any country that's been mapped out. And I think we need to be aware of that to provide a context. Secondly, there seems to be a whole lot of announcements made almost day by day that suggests something other than that precipitous drop in expenditure we're seeing. And when it comes to revenues, and you know, the discussion is avoid those tax concessions and things. Once again, what is the observed pattern of behaviour? And I guess some of this is, once again, in today's announcement, which I thought was terrific, that the business sector is providing comments on some of these broader economic documents, is, and I think it's a sort of code, projects should focus solely on those that best increase capacity and reduce most of the cost of doing business. And I think that's really about the role of government relative to, you know, getting involved and taking equity holdings in a whole series of businesses that I think, as economists, we would think would be best done by the private sector. There's a lot of ambition on the role of government in PNG. And we've also obviously got the issue still, we talk about expenditures aligned, but the quality of that expenditure is absolutely vital. And there are many and some growing issues around that. And even the business sector is talking very openly about some of those sort of challenges. So anyway, I just finish off some of the fiscal discussion with those components. Let me just move now on to the balance of payments challenges. So overall, like a lot of the numbers on the balance of payments, and I'll get to a graph that sort of indicates some sort of concerns, but there's quite a few numbers that are in many ways sort of quite positive. There's been an acknowledgement that they've moved into a deficit, but the level of international reserves is quite healthy, certainly in comparison to the times of the 1990s crisis. Literally, your balance, your level of international reserves was on the verge of zero. They've got $2 billion. Now, that's been protected through all sorts of policies that are probably doing, creating more problems for growth and sustainable growth in terms of their impact on the private sector. For example, if you're a small business in PNG, you have a new product that you want to try and explore in external markets, your capacity to set up a Vostra account at the moment to be able to book that foreign exchange. At the moment, that's still under review and has been since March, the ability to establish those accounts. These sort of things start affecting your reputation. You can't pay your import suppliers, and also if you want to start exporting, these restrictions can start undermining sustainable growth. But that level of reserve sort of sits there, and in some ways that's the benchmark for deciding if you've got a crisis, you know, running out of foreign exchange. And looking at this sort of thing for a period of time anyway, it looks as if that may not be covered on the basis of the level of reserves. The import cover, once again, noting though that the import cover looks so good in part because the imports have dropped dramatically too, not just because of the ending of the PNG LNG project, but I think it's mentioned here that I want to see more data. We haven't had any data since quarter one, but import numbers are really low for quarter one. And if that continues, I guess once again it's a leading indicator of some really worrying signs about the health of the economy as a whole if imports aren't being constrained to that extent. Just want to sort of, and I guess I mentioned this is the link between sort of the government expenditure and the balance of payments. I've got to say this because I know Robert Harden will make this sort of point otherwise, because he appropriately makes the importance. This is a key thing in looking at PNG. And I want to touch actually on a medium-term challenge because it's a short-term and a long-term challenge. Anyway, what this graph has is in the green. The dotted green was what the predictions were back in November or October last year. So a level of international reserves had sort of peaked a bit over $4 billion. We're going to drop down to about $2.5 billion. Then we're planning to increase again as the PNG LNG project came on stream. So this is IMF projections on the dotted line. The green line was an estimate made, well, what's the impact of the LNG price falls? And so that saw, rather than international reserves staying up here, which it clearly avoided in the external balance of payments crisis, now it started dropping down. So not immediately, but on this sort of pattern, sometime later in 2016, if this pattern continued and there's no other changes, then you might actually end up at a point around here where there might be some sort of crisis. And because this the gap here is the foreign exchange, the unfilled sort of foreign exchange order. So a business puts in, says, I need to pay this bill in US dollars or Australian dollars. It doesn't get processed for a lengthy period of time. And so that's a book of foreign exchange sort of orders that is uncleared and probably should be seen as a realistic charge on your level of balance of payments because your private enterprises have essentially booked all these charges in foreign currency against it. That still suggests that there wouldn't really be a problem through to 2015. And this level will be sort of assisted if they do come out with a sovereign bond or if there are asset sales to companies overseas, because both of those actions will bring in foreign exchange and will help lift that level of reserves. So in some ways, I'm not particularly bothered about that. What really bothers me on the external front is this graph. And this graph looks at exchange rates. The blue line is what most people focus on and certainly is what's prominent in the Bank of PNG's discussions about exchange rate adjustment. It's the US per kina line. It stops in 2014. We know this has continued from the 40 cent level, sitting more like about, I think, 36 or something at the moment. So it's continued its movement downwards. And that's seen as the government adjusting its exchange rate to match the sort of the new external circumstances. But as an economist, that's a single exchange rate. PNG trades with quite a few sort of countries, Australia, other countries in Asia. And rather than going down, if I put the Australian exchange rate here, we'd find a significant increase. So since June of last year, the kina has appreciated against the US Australian dollar by over 30%, for example, rather than declining against the US dollar. So has the kina appreciated or depreciated? If you look at the US dollar, you'd say it's depreciated and there's adjustment. If you look at a large number of other currencies, Australian dollar, Indonesian rupiah, Malaysian ringgit, you have got appreciations of over 25%. That's good for inflation. It keeps importing inflation low because you're importing lots of things from Australia and Asia. But in terms of the actual adjustment you need to use and using your exchange rate as a lever to deal with these exchange rate patterns, it's not a very good measure. So the red is an attempt at a better measure that does two things. Number one, it takes into that trade-weighted index, so it looks at all currencies, not just the US dollar, and rates them according to importance in your trade share. So it's got Australian dollar in it, Asian currencies, as well as the US dollar in it. It also takes into account inflation differentials between countries. So one would expect, so countries with very high rates of inflation, their currency needs to go down to sort of keep a sort of, I think that's right, not gonna make. Anyway, you need to take into account these sort of inflation differences to try and compare how competitive your country is with another country because price levels change. And that's this red line. And look where this red line is. And this red line has actually increased a little bit since then. It's hard because we don't have the detailed data since from the Bank of PNG. The TWI's trade-weighted index has increased slightly over that period of time. And inflation in PNG is higher than certainly quite a few peers. It's going to be pretty close to that level. And the line here still is, that is sitting so far above that exchange rate that PNG faced in the early 2000s. In fact, it's at a higher level ever or since 1985. And that's going to have an impact on competitiveness. And that's got an impact on the structure of the PNG economy longer term. And it's got to have distribution implications. For example, if you are a coffee grower in the highlands of PNG, this is bad news for you as an exporter, because it means that people in East Timor-Leste or Brazil, if their exchange rate hasn't done the same, then they're much more competitive than you are. So a huge variation. But wow, could you imagine what would happen if you tried to adjust this to green line? You know, we've had food riots in the streets of Port Moresby previously when prices increased too quickly on staple products. So the huge challenge there. All right, let me finish on just some budget criteria. Last year I put out 10 criteria for evaluating the 2015 budget. I had a look at those and I thought actually they're still pretty sound. It's the sort of things you'd look for in a budget. Once you read the blogs, like, no, I went through those and ended up saying the budget could either be seen as a C if you believe that they'd make these great big expenditure cuts by 2017, or an E if you didn't believe it. And so it's come out as an E. But hopefully the 2016 budget will be a lot better. And as I say, I think you know, there's some signs in the medium term of certainly at one level, there's certainly a real pattern of adjustment there. But I think there's some more specific questions that I've got down on the right-hand side. I can just, I guess, leave that there. For example, the pattern of cuts that we'll see, you know, has money been allowed for the drought? Talking about $178 million being available through reallocation, $2 million per district is not a needs-based drought response. You know, it's these things should be national, and they are tail-end risks that should be additional to a budget, not just built in. And so there's things there. And if we're talking about a 20% cut in revenue, is it reasonable to expect something like a 20% cut in areas such as, you know, new programs, such as DSIP? And in part that'll depend. If there's wonderful accountability mechanisms that indicate that every keener has been spending incredibly well in the last year, then you might feel more sympathetic to maintaining that level because they've proven they can spend all of those funds effectively. But we'll see what information is provided in the budget on that sort of level of accountability. A couple of other things, a few big risks. What's going to be happening with asset sales, the oil search loan, the UBS rollover, things really keen on. The GFS 2014 government financial statistics sounds really boring, but could be really important as an adjustment, a new way of showing the budget. Some transparency sort of issues. I want to see more about Kumul and especially how it interacts with the Sovereign Wealth Fund and the dividends that it flows. Tax review, really interesting outcomes of the tax review. Big chance there for some structural changes. But as I said, that seems to be a major issue in the budget strategy. Public sector reform will be up there again, but once again, last year was just the establishment of another committee. We're seeing, you know, 10 years of talk about public sector reform. What actually would be a sign that they're going to do something serious about public sector reform? It'd have to be big, I think, to sort of make you really feel as if they're going to do something this time. And at the final end, the credibility, just these observed actions, that sort of slide I had on real talk. To finish off, I guess, in the conclusions, different interpretations of potential crisis. And being aware of those, I've only focused on the fiscal and the exchange rate. There are real challenges there, and they do have to be managed carefully. There are ways out, but any of those options will be really, really hard. And I guess that, you know, there are pathways away from crisis, potential crisis, but they are going to be really, really tough. And some of the things that we'll be looking at in the next 8 days will really give a better sense to do the analysis and to sort of make judgments about how that pathway from crisis will actually occur. A sense that the external position can be sort of managed, but the real challenge is that longer term competitiveness in the PNG economy. And the importance of a sustainable growth policy, I think, for dealing with a number of these issues. Yeah. Sorry, I've gone a little over time, but let me finish there and just open up for.
You have been listening to a podcast from the Development Policy Centre. For more information on our work, visit our website at devpolicy.anu.edu.au. To join the conversation on Australian aid, Papua New Guinea and the Pacific, and global development policy, visit our blog at devpolicy.org. At the blog, you can also sign up to our newsletter for all the latest updates or connect with us on social media. Thanks for listening.